Good evening and welcome to the Astoria City Council meeting of June 6, 2016. Chief Ames, roll call, please.
Councilor Price.
Here.
Councilor Herzig.
Here.
Councilor Ward.
Here.
Mayor Luner.
Here, and Councilor Nemawil had hoped to appear by phone, but her plane was delayed, so she will not be appearing tonight, but she is excused. Reports of councilors. Councilor Herzig.
Thank you, Mayor. The mayor and I attended the opening of the Coast Guard housing, the new development, and they are just gorgeous. The amount of attention to detail and care for quality that goes into those buildings is really amazing. And the remarks were that they really an example to the country about how to do Coast Guard housing right, and we're very lucky to have that here in Astoria. The following day, we attended the changing of the guard. I was at the Coast Guard. Captain Travers retired. Captain Timmons taking his place. Captain Travers is staying in the area, and it's another example of how much the Coast Guard has benefited this community. We've had Captain Travers staying, retired Captain Bruce Jones staying, and I have to say it's, some of you may not know, but Bruce Jones has decided to run for City Council for Ward 4 this coming election cycle, and I think he's going to be a fantastic addition to the City Council if he's elected. So again, another gift that the Coast Guard gives to this community. And finally, the city put on this really fantastic emergency preparedness forum. And one of the, I think, most gripping things we heard that Theo Rizzo from the state said, Clatsop County, the coast, after we have the major earthquake, we can expect 3 to 5 years to go by before services will be fully restored here. That's 3 to 5 years. She made the comparison with Japan because they had invested in infrastructure. In a matter of weeks, they were back at 80% capacity. It will take Clatsop County years to recover. And my feeling is that Clatsop County will not recover if we have to wait 3 years for our service to be restored. So I think we need to start putting pressure on our state representatives to start building resilient infrastructure before the event, so that we will not be depopulated after running our schools and hospitals and stores on generators for 3 years. So thank you, Mayor. Mm-hmm.
Councilor Price.
Well, it sounds like my fellow councilors will report on all the civic events, so I will simply invite you to my next Salonical, which will be just before we meet again. The Salonical is on June 18th, 2:30 to 4 o'clock in the library. And those of you that term is new, that's what I call my meet and greets. It's a political salon. All are welcome.
Councilor Moore.
On Friday, I had the opportunity to go to the Ocean View Cemetery and look at the window restoration project that the preservation kids at Clatsop College did. They did a very nice job. They were very proud of their work, and it's much, much better now. They're looking for another grant so they can go a little further into that, and I hope they're successful. That's all I've got.
Thanks. Okay, it's been a busy couple of weeks. I too attended the ribbon cutting at the Coast Guard housing. I asked if there was any room for a mayor. They said no. We had a wonderful open house with with the various library options, and that was very well attended and very well presented. I appreciated all the efforts of the Planning Commission and so forth to put that together. I volunteered at the chip-in event, which this last time was at the Ocean View Cemetery. There were only four of us, but we trimmed as much as we could and dug as many weeds as we could while we were out there. I also went to the mausoleum window replacement presentation. And it is very impressive, and hopefully they can get further grants to complete that project. I wanted to congratulate the Astoria High School girls track team. Some of you may have seen this in the paper. They won the OSAA 4A girls track and field state championship. They not only won, they beat the second place team by twice. I mean, it was amazing. So they did a great job, and I want to be sure that that is recorded somewhere. I also wanted to announce that on June 20th, neither myself or Zeddy McKay, who is the council president, will be here. So in our absence, Russ Ward, who has been a prior council president, will preside. And that's my report. Presentations. Cameron Moore, the new Clatsop County Manager. We're anxious to meet you and hear from you.
We've already met me. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm just going to take a few minutes. I never like to start off when I meet people for the first time disappointing them. But I'm going to disappoint you because it says I have a presentation, and I don't. But what I did want to do is to stop by, sort of formally introduce myself. I had an opportunity to meet many of you during the search process and some of you since then. And also just talk a little bit about my background, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer those. I have been here for a couple of months. Started with the county on April 6th, and happened to be a commission night. So, you know, I had a great day. We had executive sessions and long commission meetings and all that on the first day. I've come here from Illinois since 2007. I've been the CEO of the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. And I always tell people there's two things about the name of that organization that are not descriptive. And one is we're not just Champaign County. I had 12 facilities in four counties. And planning was a very small part of what we did there. We really were basically a council of governments, if you're familiar with that concept. So we did a lot of, operated a lot of programs, provided services on behalf of our member governments, city and county governments. If you're familiar with the concept of COGS, it's a great way for local governments to collaborate on things that they may find that they can do better together than they can individually. But I've spent about the last 32 or 33 years in leadership roles, various titles, president, executive director, CEO of nonprofits and governmental organizations. I'd say the first 15, 18 years of my career, I actually ran economic development organizations on a day-to-day basis, and spent a number of years actually on the faculty of the Economic Development Institute, teaching courses like planning for economic development and managing economic development organizations, things like that. Again, the last 8.5, 9 years, I've been in Illinois working with local government. But like everybody, you know, sometimes you kind of sit up and sort of assess where you are and where you want to be. And, you know, I think my wife and I had kind of made a decision last fall that, you know, Illinois is a nice place, but not necessarily where we wanted to be. We do like a lot of outdoor active lifestyle type things. And those of you that have spent any time in the Midwest, where you can look in any direction and see nothing but cornfields for 1,000 miles. Which is true in some cases, is not always conducive to that type of outdoor lifestyle. So it really was a perfect combination coming here of a place that we wanted to live and a job that I wanted to do. And so very pleased to be selected as the county manager. Happy to be here. I have a couple of people I know had asked right before the meeting. Got the keys to our house today, so you know, we're moving in at the end of the week, and you know, finally we'll be able to say that we truly are full-time residents who bought a home in Gearhart. So looking forward to that, looking forward to being a part of the Clatsop County community for you know, many years to come. And with that, I think I'd just like to open it up and see if anybody has any questions.
Well, I'd just like to say welcome. I've had the opportunity on a couple of occasions to chat with you, but I'm glad to see you. I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And from the county standpoint, we certainly look forward to continuing our active partnership with the city of Astoria. Appreciate it.
Welcome on behalf of the Astoria City Council. We're delighted to have you on board, and we look forward to seeing what happens in Clatsop County.
Great. Thank you very much.
The next item on the agenda is the Dr. Edward Harvey Historic Preservation Awards. Let me read a little bit about what this is about. Many of you who have been in the community, I'm sure, know this as well as I do, but the award is named for Dr. Edward Harvey, who was a pioneer in recognizing the importance of historic preservation in Astoria. His original efforts of placing plaques denoting the brief history of a building are still seen throughout the city. He lobbied the Clatsop County Commissioners to establish a historic advisory committee, of which he served as the chairman for many years. The award has been presented yearly since 1988 to owners of residential, commercial, or public buildings who have completed exterior painting, rehabilitation, restoration, or beautification projects which have been sensitive to the historical attributes of the building and or the architectural heritage of Astoria. The Dr. Edward Harvey Historic Preservation Award is presented annually by the City Council and the Historic Landmarks Commission. The award is competitive and recognizes persons who, in the judgment of the Historic Landmarks Commission, have completed the year's best example of a historic rehabilitation or restoration project which respects the history and architectural history heritage of the city. For 2016, the best example of the renovation of a historic residential property, the award is presented to Laura A. Rogers, 3720 Duane Street. I believe that's the Benjamin Young.
Andrew Young.
Who knew? Okay. The City of Astoria thanks you for your efforts. Restoration of this structure has added to the overall historic character of Astoria. So is Laura here tonight?
Yep.
Okay.
Mayor Paul, you're going up to me.
Sure.
I would like to mention that Laura is my next door neighbor. And she bought a house that I was certain that the only way to rescue it was to tear it down a year and a half ago. And she has done an absolutely marvelous job, and she just won't quit. She's making me feel really ashamed living next door to her.
The next item on carbon credits, our planning director, Kevin Cronin will... Oh, Ken.
I can make something up.
Ken Cronin, Public Works Director.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and councilors. Happy to report that earlier in the week, we received the payment for the first part of the carbon credits from our watershed in the amount of $1,028,750. To be followed 12 months from now to complete the total package with the same amount. So, and it's been a difficult project, which requires a lot of detail, but we have worked through the inventory of our forest, the verification of what's there, and certifying that the efforts to inventory and to validate what is there has been done properly. And so tonight I'd like to introduce the city team that, let me come up. It would be Mike Barnes, city forester. David Ford, our forest, carbon forest consultant. And these two guys have worked very, very hard to bring this to fruition. And I just want to thank you both.
Congratulations.
And now I'd like to introduce the purchaser of our carbon credits. We have the Executive Director of the Climate Trust, Sean Penrith, and with him we have Sheldon Dvoreski. He is pretty important. Director of Carbon Compliance. So, if you two gentlemen can come up and...
Sure.
We have the lectern.
Good evening. Do I need to state my name? And,
yes, please.
Sean Penrith, Executive Director for the Climate Trust. We're based in Portland, Oregon.
Sheldon Zakreski with the Climate Trust.
Also in Portland, Oregon.
So I'm going to give you a small context of the Climate Trust, because I don't know how many people know about the Climate Trust. But about 18 years ago, the state of Oregon had great foresight, because they passed what's known as the Oregon CO2 standard in 97. And essentially what that did was have utilities have the option of complying with this carbon emission limit by paying funds to a qualified organization, which we are the only qualified organization in the state of Oregon. And it was our job as an NGO based in the state to invest those monies into carbon reduction projects, to create carbon emission credits, retire those credits permanently, thereby allowing the utilities to comply with the law. And so over the last almost 20 years, we've deployed in the state of Oregon $8.5 million into 17 projects. And in total, we've managed just over $40 million on behalf of utilities into carbon projects. This particular project is signature for us. We love investing in Oregon-based projects, but until this project came along, we did not have a single forestry project in our portfolio based in the state of Oregon. So we're very attached to the City of Astoria, the Bear Creek project. It is the first, it is signature. It represents a lot of what's important to us. Of course, there's carbon sequestration in the forest, but there's also water quality enhancement, habitat protection, and a bunch of what we call ecosystem benefits by creating a natural, preserving a natural resource like this. And so when, so Sheldon's our Director of Carbon Compliance. We have been working hard on this project, and I think thanks to Mike and David and to Ken Cook, we've managed to come over the finish line. It's really great for us to be able to support a project like this. Just for context, forestry across the country is we're losing around 26 million tons by the end of 2030 due to development pressure. And unless we have a mechanism like carbon markets where we can create these carbon reduction projects and protect these natural sinks, that's essentially carbon sinks, we would be in danger of increasing our greenhouse gas emission limits. This project, just for context, represents around 51,000 passenger vehicle per year. The emissions that come from 51,000 cars are avoided because of your project. So not only is it taking those emissions out of the atmosphere, it is also preserving and enhancing the clean water. So that's really important to us. So I mentioned 56% of the money that we are entitled, bestowed or entrusted with through the Oregon program is invested back into the state. What that does, which is great for us, is not only does it sequester the carbon, but it also preserves local or stimulates local economies. Because if you think about it, we invest in forestry, grasslands, dairy digesters. All of those activities are based in rural parts of not only Oregon, but across America. And so by us investing into projects in these rural areas, we're able to provide some small but a discrete amount of finance to support these projects across the country. So to date, we've retired around 1 million tons. By the time we finish all of our contracted periods, we will be close to around 2 million tons. And I just want to thank the City of Astoria. I think you guys have been, there's no other city that we've worked with that has understood the value of preserving a watershed in this manner and has been willing to work with us. It's pretty innovative what you're doing. And we were talking earlier about how important this is so that, and our hope is that other people will look at your project and go, you know what, they did it, can we do it? And of course the Climate Trust would like to step in and help others just like this. Did I miss anything?
That's it.
So if there's any questions, he's my technical, he keeps me on the straight and narrow, so anything technical, direct to Michelle. But we just want to say it's great to be here. I was here on Friday, actually. I was sailing a boat up to Sydney, Canada, so I'm back here on Monday. It's great. So, yeah.
I have a question, and again, all credit to our city staff who put so much work into this. Does Astoria get any sort of a Climate Trust city designation, something we can
arrange anything you need.
Well, I think it's good marketing both ways. I think that as you try to recruit more communities into this program, to have that sort of a designation would be really nice. And I think Astoria, through Ken Cook and the staff's work, has really earned that designation. So maybe something like that could be arranged.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there isn't an official designation. We, of course, will talk it up a lot. As we do, we're very proud of all our projects that we've invested in, and because they are not just carbon projects to us, they are human projects. They represent all sorts of important things, clean water, habitat preservation. So we go out of our way to create important stories so that other people go, we want to do that too.
Well, on behalf of the city, thank you so much to the Climate Trust, and thank you so much to our local folks who've worked so hard, I know that they have, and it seems to me this is one of those win-win projects where the environment wins, and the City of Astoria wins, and the Climate Trust wins, so can't beat that. Thank you so much.
Good evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar, and as you know, if we haven't had anyone who objects to any item on the consent calendar, we pass it in one motion. Have there been any requests for removal from the community?
No requests.
What about from the council? Okay. Is there a motion then?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar. Chief Johnston, roll call.
Councilor Herzig.
Aye.
Councilor Price.
Aye.
Councilor War.
Aye.
Mayor Lemire.
Aye. Regular agenda, and we have a public hearing tonight and a resolution regarding Columbia Memorial Hospital bonds.
Right, and I'll give a brief staff report before we open the public hearing. So Columbia Lutheran Charities, which does business as Columbia Memorial Hospital, has requested that the Hospital Facilities Authority of the City of Astoria issue non-recourse revenue bonds for and on behalf of Columbia Memorial. The principal and interest on these bonds will not constitute a debt to the City of Astoria or to the Hospital Authority,
nor shall the bonds be payable from a tax of any nature levied upon any property within the city or any other public pool subdivision of the state of Oregon. The Hospital Facilities Authority is asking the council tonight to hold a hearing regarding the issuance of these bonds. There are Oregon revised statute provisions which clearly provide for the obligations of the Hospital Facilities Authority and Columbia Memorial Hospital. If the hearing is without consequence tonight, the Hospital Facilities Authority is requesting council to approve the resolution which was included in your memo. I would note that this is a technical exercise required by the statutes to satisfy the legal requirements for the hospital to sell the bonds. It's requesting again that council hold the hearing and consider approval of the resolution. I would note that Doug Goh, who is the bond attorney, is present tonight and will be able to provide additional specificity with regards to this matter as a part of the public hearing. Mayor, if you want to go ahead and move forward with that.
Okay. Do we want to have council weigh in first and then we'll open the public hearing? Any council member want to weigh in? No? Okay.
I'm still trying to understand that this will in no way increase taxes for the citizens of the story. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, I will open the public hearing then. And in order to respect everyone's time, comments will be limited to 3 minutes. So, anyone in the audience wish to?
Perhaps maybe Mr. Goh, who is the bond attorney, if he would be able to start off and be able to provide a little bit more information regarding the proposal.
Madam Mayor, councilors, I'm Doug Goh with Warwick Harrington Sutcliffe of Portland, bond counsel and special counsel to the Hospital Facilities Authority in the City of Astoria. The Hospital Authority just celebrated its 40th anniversary. The authority was created by the City Council back in 1976 for the purpose of allowing nonprofit hospitals, in this case Columbia Memorial, to issue tax-exempt bonds. Under the federal tax code, a nonprofit, while it's a tax-exempt organization itself, it needs to rely on a governmental body to issue bonds on its behalf. The reason for the public hearing this evening is the requirements actually of the federal tax code. That federal tax code says for the bonds to be tax-exempt, there must be a public hearing. After notice of the public hearing is published 14 days prior. That has happened. This meeting has been properly noticed, public hearing has been properly noticed. Then after the public hearing, the what are called the applicable elected officials, and that's you, because you are the body who created the hospital authority, must approve the bond issues for them to be tax exempt. So that's a very brief overview. Also, as the city manager has noted, and we have provided a letter to the city attorney to this effect, as we have in the past, to the councilor's point, there is no tax liability or no liability of any kind on the part of the city. The city and the hospital authority has no taxing power, so there are no taxes associated with these bonds. These bonds are solely secured by the resources and credit of Columbia Memorial Hospital. I'll be happy to answer any questions that the mayor or the councilors may have.
Any questions or comments?
Great. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I will open the public hearing then regarding Columbia Memorial Hospital bonds. Anyone in the audience want to speak to this issue? Okay, the public hearing is closed. Could we have a motion regarding the attached resolution?
Mayor, I'd like to ask a question first. Who is on the current Hospital Facilities Authority of the City of Astoria?
Mr. Yoke, you have all the names right off the top of your...
Okay. Let me pull that out, if I may. The current members include Craig Hoxsey, William Willis Van Dusen, Kevin Lacoste, Nicole Williams, and Celia Davis.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I found the city manager's memorandum and resolution quite clear, and if our city attorney has read and approves of the resolution, and so given all of that, I move that we approve the resolution authorizing the sale of bonds.
Second.
Okay, and this requires a roll call vote, so Ms. Cosby?
Councilor Herzig?
Aye.
Councilor Price?
Aye.
Councilor Ward?
Aye.
Mayor Lemire?
Aye. Thank you. Item 7B is a resolution to receive state revenue, state shared revenues.
This is the first item on the agenda tonight, which is associated with the consideration of the budget for the next fiscal year. And Oregon revised statutes require that the city adopt a resolution to declare its intent to receive state revenue for each new fiscal year. These revenues would include gas taxes, alcohol taxes, cigarette taxes, and other state shared revenues. So tonight it's recommended that the city council consider the resolution for adoption.
Okay, any comments, questions from the council? Could we have a motion?
I move that the city adopt the resolution to receive state revenues for fiscal year 2016-2017.
Second.
Okay, we again need a roll call vote. Mr. Cronin.
Councilor Herzig.
Aye.
Councilor Price.
Aye.
Councilor Ward.
Aye.
Mayor Lanier.
Aye. Thank you. Item C is a public hearing and resolution to adopt the City of Astoria budget for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2017.
So Oregon local budget law requires that the council hold a public hearing on the budget as recommended for approval by the City of Astoria Budget Committee. And the committee has discussed and recommended the budget for the council to consider. I would note that there are changes from the proposed budget as recommended for approval by the Budget Committee as identified in the memo. And this deals with the ending fund balance of the Capital Improvement Fund. And this deals with an additional cost for the Spur 14 project, which was brought before you at the May 16th, 2016 meeting. The resolution, which was included with your council packet, will adopt resources and appropriations and authorize the collection of taxes at a rate of $8.1738 per thousand for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2017. Tonight, it's recommended that the council hold a public hearing, and after the hearing, it's recommended that the council consider the resolution to adopt the budget.
Are there any comments, questions, concerns from the council? Okay, then I'll open the public hearing. Anyone want to speak to the budget? Okay. Skip is wanting to talk to the budget.
Skip Hockey, 92732 Deer Valley Road, Astoria. And my only comment on the budget, I know there are some questions of the contract that we had, the chamber had with the City of Astoria at the budget hearings. And I thought I would take any opportunity, if there were still questions, to field them prior to a vote. I think you received some additional information with regard, we did our best, our level best to separate the chamber budget and expenses from the visitor services center. And it's inexact science, but all we can do is the best we can. And I need to know if you had any questions about that.
Thank you, Skip, for the additional information.
I'm sorry?
I just wanted to thank information, and I don't have any.
Well, it was a good exercise for me too, and I would like to compliment Susan because she helped me a great deal.
Okay, thank you, Skip.
Thank you.
If there are no other comments from the audience, we'll close the public hearing and we'll take a roll call vote again. Mr. Cook?
Madam Mayor, can we hold a discussion, please?
Oh, okay.
Council President, wish to comment? A little discussion. Friday, some of us attended the League of Oregon Cities presentation where we were informed that due to recent Oregon State Court decisions, cities have lost what's called recreational immunity. That means that if somebody injures themselves in the city park and can claim negligence, they can sue not the city, but city workers, which in effect is suing the city. The League of Oregon Cities is going to appeal this. They're going to try and fight a company. But in the meantime, the cities now are exposed to suits based on negligence. Working with that, I would like to propose again that the city take $25,000 from the Promote a Story funds allocated to the Chamber's Visitor Center and $25,000 allocated to the Chamber's Tourism Committee and put those into the Promote a Story Contingency Fund to enhance river walk maintenance, including trash pickup, and possibly provide some porta potties during the season. I think if we don't take very seriously the maintenance issues on the river walk, we could be setting ourselves up for some potential lawsuits kind of things. So again, I would like to take $50,000 cumulatively from the Promote a Story funds going to the Chamber of Commerce, put them into the Promote a Story Contingency Fund, and hopefully use them to make sure that our river walk is safe and sanitary this coming season.
Councilor Herzig, it might be useful to consider that at a little bit later time, when the Parks Master Plan comes back to us for final adoption, and we will be talking about the budget further than we did talk about talking about that. We did talk about talking about that later on. I know that I made some suggestions about the Parks Master Plan afterwards about finding additional resources. And I'm not sure that this would be the best one, but I'd be certainly willing to talk about it, but not at this time.
Thank you, Councilor Price. I understand that this is not a long-term solution, but the summer season is upon us. We need to act now if you're going to act on this. Again, it's not the long-term solution, but for this summer, I think we need to make sure that the parks has enough funds to promote Astoria to keep our river walks and our parks in general as safe as possible to avoid potential lawsuits. Again, I really understand this isn't a sustainable solution. We're waiting for the Parks Master Plan, but it's June. We're having our tourism crowd start already kind of thing. We need to take some sort of measures in the present. Thank you. I look forward again to the Parks Master Plan with you.
Okay, are you going to make a motion or what?
I move that the city take $25,000 from the Promote a Story funds currently allocated to the Chamber of Commerce Visitor Center and $25,000 from the Promote a Story funds currently allocated to the Chamber of Commerce Tourism Agency and put those with the Promote a Story Contingency Fund with the hopes that those would be used to keep the riverwalk safe and hygienic during the summer season.
Thank you. Is there a second? The motion dies for lack of a second. Thank you. Could we have a motion to approve the resolution?
I move to approve the resolution to adopt the budget.
Second.
Okay. Again, we need a roll call vote. Mr. Cook.
Councilor Ward?
Aye.
Price?
Aye.
Councilor Herzig?
Nay.
Mayor LeMire?
Aye. Thank you. Okay, our next item is a liquor license application from Erica Miltenberger for the Workman's Irish Pub.
So a liquor license, as the mayor had mentioned, has been filed by Burton Bilderberger for Oregon Last LLC, which is doing business as the Workman's Irish Pub. This application is for a new outlet with a full on-premise sales commercial establishment license. The site of this proposed location is 218 West Marine Drive, formerly known as the Uniontown Cafe. The departments of the city have reviewed the application. I would note that the Asbury Police Department prepared an application which was attached to the memorandum associated with this item. Based upon this analysis, it's recommended that the city council recommend denial to the OLCC for the liquor license. Tonight, it's recommended that the city council consider this application.
Comments from the council? Or questions? Okay, is Erica Milton agreeing?
I am, yes.
Would you like to come forward?
I would, yes.
Okay, you'll give your name and your address, please.
Erica Miltenberger. It's 2516 3rd Street, Tillamook, Oregon. I had the denial go through, or the police were wanting to deny it, or go through the denial because I own another bar over in Tillamook, Oregon. And when we opened there, we were having problems with you know, like fighting and different things like that. Since we've been there, we really have been around a lot. I know that when the chief had spoke with the chief over in Tillamook, we had just recently had something happen where there was an altercation. There were a couple fights over that weekend, but we really have cleaned it up a lot. I mean, I know that it looks bad on paper, but we don't have a lot of fights. We are always really good about, you know, we have systems in place now. We started closing earlier. When we originally went into Tillamook, we weren't expecting to have these kind of issues because we own an insurance company in Portland and we insure 400 bars and taverns. So we kind of, you know, when we came into this, we thought, well, you know, we're not going to have those kind of problems here. And the OLCC had talked to me about it prior to us going in. But they've been having a lot of problems in town. Like, I mean, people have been throwing through windows and there's all sorts of stuff that's happened. But we haven't actually had anything happen inside the bar for a year and a half now. There's been a couple altercations outside on the sidewalk of people that we've either cut off and we've had go outside. And that's where these things have happened. We have already been approved from the OLCC. I have the same inspector down in Tillamook as I have here that has told me that we wouldn't have any problem if, you know, we are approved with you guys of getting our liquor license as early as tomorrow. So we're used to working with them. We haven't ever had any serious violations of anything happen at our bar. We have, I have heard from the OLCC that they've had a lot of issues here with a couple of the bars. They've, you know, been forced to close down early and they can't sell shots and they can't do different things like that. We've never had anything like that happen to us. But that was one of the primary reasons that I believe that I was denied for this. And also on my paperwork, I did not disclose my last name. My maiden name was Moat, and I was married in between. And so the Gerlach was my old married name. And I was filling out the application fast. I've been through this process a couple times for liquor applications, and I was filling it out. I just went through at fast, I don't know. I just put my maiden name note, but it has my social security number on it. I've already been approved through, you know, Tillamook. I've owned a bar in Portland as well. So I don't know. Do you guys have any questions for me about that?
I have a question. Now that you know that Astoria can be pretty rowdy in its bar use, are you making any preparations for that? Are you going to have a bouncer? If problems do occur, how do you plan to deal with them?
Well, I brought some stuff to show you guys. First of all,
Start with the food.
I'm hungry. First of all, we're going to be more of a restaurant here than a bar. We will be selling liquor, but we're thinking we're going to be closer to 20% liquor and 80% food. We're doing a lot of traditional Irish foods in the steakhouse as well as burgers. So just wanted to kind of show you guys some pictures. We have a scratch kitchen, so everything's made from scratch. And this is basically what we've taken the building from so far. It was had graffiti all over it. It had been it's been empty for a few years, and in the past it was Cafe Uniontown, which I know at one time was really successful, as well as the Putter's Grain.
Fiddler's Grain.
And I know that was an Irish bar that was really successful there as well. So we've made a lot of changes. We've repainted the outside, redone the signage. So it looks a lot better now than it did. But I wanted to kind of give you an example of my bar over in Tillamook, because it is more of a pub. There's no seating. It's more of like an actual bar. So there's not kind of a different type of atmosphere than what we're going to have here. So here we're going to have minors until 10. And my daughter's going to be working there. She's 16, so it's her first summer job. And we're trying to create more of a family atmosphere. The bar here only has 5 bar stools. So it's a little tiny bar up in the front. If you guys have ever been to Cafe Uniontown, we didn't change the floor plan. So it has a tiny bar on the right-hand side, and the rest of it is all just dining. So it's just all dining room. We have 70 seats and outdoor seating in the back as well. So it's really, you know, we don't feel like we'll need a bouncer because we're going to be closing earlier. We're more of a restaurant, and we don't anticipate having any issues like that. If we do, then we definitely would be willing to hire somebody to come in and help out as far as a bouncer, but I don't foresee that we would need one, being that we're opening up more as a restaurant.
What time are you planning to close?
We're planning on closing at 12, and you know, we'll close earlier than that. If it's slower, then we'll close at like 10. So we're thinking about 10 to 12 o'clock, and on the weekends around 12 o'clock. So we're going to have live music, but with live music, we have like a piano player coming in. We have some traditional Irish music that's really calm, and it's kind of more like dinner music. They come in from 6 to 9 every night, 7 days a week. So after 9 o'clock, there won't be any more live music going on.
Ms. Milton, I noticed on your application you have a 2:00 you say business hours 3 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. I imagine you just put that to make sure you had that capacity.
I put that because that way, yeah.
Exactly.
And we actually redid the application since then and changed it to 12 o'clock because they said that they would just rather know what your hours are planning on being. But I put it until 2:30. That way, since we're an establishment, bar establishment, I just thought that that's what.
I understand that you do know we may close earlier if it was not busy. So
yeah.
You want to keep yourself up anyway.
Yes.
Now, you said that you were going to be about 80% food, 20%.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yes.
And you also mentioned that your OLCC inspector had said that the state had approved your license and would be willing to issue the license if we approved it.
He said that if you guys approved it, we could get it as early as tomorrow or the next day because they have everything ready to go. I was supposed to come to the city council meeting last month, but it got postponed, so we were already thought that we would have it as of last month, so we've been waiting for this meeting. And then, like I said, it's the same inspector that I already have down in Tillamook. I have, there's two of them, it's Mark and Chris, and they both are my inspectors down there.
Well, it says on our report that the staff has received 26 police reports from the City of Tillamook Police Department for calls involving or related to Workman's Irish Pub, the what you own in Tillamook.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us, has it improved?
It's definitely improved. When we first came into town, like I said, we were opening the Irish Pub. It definitely is more of a bar than this location, but we were not anticipating the clientele that we have. I mean, a lot of them are great. They're industry workers, they're great. A lot of them are kids, and they come in and they, it's just kind of the community there. There's a lot of farmers and a lot of loggers, and, we've learned to deal with it. We haven't had a fight actually inside the bar for a really long time. We have a really strong policy on 86ing. Anybody who even has an altercation in our bar, even if they're just being rude to other people, we'll 86 them. We have a 2-page list of people that are not allowed in our bar anymore. So in the beginning, we opened over there, we're from Portland, so we didn't know everyone in town, and we didn't really know what to expect. And then when we opened, we kind of had to alter things a lot. We had to put an extra person on at night just to, walk through the crowd and make sure that things are okay, because it's a really busy bar. And we've had to, make a lot of changes. I think that, in the beginning of the year, it was a lot rougher, and now we've been doing really good. We haven't had as many issues. We've just really learned to, work with the situation. And like I said, we haven't had a fight even inside the bar at all.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're concerned about is that you have good relations with the neighbors, with the people who are in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is mentioned here is that business owner reports that he regularly finds trash, debris, vomit, or other substances in front of his business, the Workman's Irish Pub, and in the parking lot of the Rodeo Steakhouse on Saturday and Sunday mornings. The business owner reported he has tried to work with the applicant and her husband with no success. Business owner reported that he received a call from the owner of Rodeo Steakhouse reporting on the same morning that he found trash and broken beer bottles in his parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that doesn't happen.
That definitely is not going to happen. First of all, as far as the cigarette butts, we used to sweep them up when we came in the morning, but now we started doing it at nighttime. We tried to come up with different systems. As far as the rodeo goes, I mean, they close down. They really do overserve people really bad, and then they send them all over our way. And a lot of that time, when people are vomiting out in their parking lot or anything else, it's from people that are coming from their own place. But we're really good friends with the bar. We're really good friends with them. We have a really good relationship with the rodeo. We're on a bowling league together that we started. We do all of our Christmas parties together. My husband and the owner go out golfing together, so it's not like, we're in really good relations with the rodeo, but we definitely have had issues with them sending people over, so we started actually closing at the same time that they do, so that they can't send everyone over our way.
So what is your policy for people who obviously had too much to drink?
Well, there's, we try to monitor that. There's three other bars right around us, and so it's kind of hard because a lot of times they'll walk in. Now if they're even intoxicated, we just ask them to leave. We don't serve them if they're intoxicated, but a lot of times we used to try to be nice and be like, oh, well, you can stay here as long as you're not causing any trouble. Here's some water. And then I learned that I feel like, it makes us look like we're over-serving people because they're still in our bar hanging out. So recently we just started making it so that if you're overly intoxicated, then, we ask them to leave, so that we don't have to, the responsibility of it.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, well, not a question, but I would, if I could just make a comment, that we are very lucky, I think, this council and this city, that we have a police department, a chief who finds these kinds of reports important and actually goes to the trouble to really research and investigate every licensee who comes forward for OLCC, despite what we learned last week, which we had an absolutely horrendous long list of very difficult problems with a licensee, says that OLCC doesn't even pay attention to what cities say, which I think, rather than just saying we shouldn't even bother, I think we should be talking to OLCC that they should be paying attention to what cities want, what communities want. This application resulted in a 12.5-page memorandum from our Deputy Chief of Police, which is a litany of personal and professional irresponsibilities and a recommendation that we deny it. Perhaps you will get the same kind of respect from will get the same kind of respect from OLCC as I guess we get always, which they won't pay any attention to us and will grant you the license. But I move that we accept the staff recommendation that we deny this permit. Is there a second?
Can I say one more thing? I mean, we bought this building, we've hired our whole staff, we have it completely ready to open, and we have had it ready to open for a month that we've been waiting out. And we've had 15 people that we've already hired, and a part of them have already quit their jobs to do this. And, you know, I'm a very good business owner. I work very hard to keep our bar, you know, a safe place, and, you know, and especially in this location, we're opening more of a restaurant. So, you know, if your concern is that, you know, you're worried about fights or things like that, it definitely won't be an issue. It's going to be more of like the Silver Salmon rather than like, you know, the Labor Temple or something like that, or the Triangle Tavern. I mean, it's a completely different type of atmosphere. And that's why we're opening it here, and that's why we're doing it, is because we want to have, you know, a nicer place.
Is there a second to Commissioner Price's motion? Okay. Evidently not. Is there a motion to approve?
I move that we approve the application.
Is there a second?
I move then that the council take no action on this application.
I think I'll approve that, or second that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, so we will take no action on this and leave the decision to the OLCC. But thank you very much for your presentation.
Good luck.
Thank you. The next item is the authorization to bid the 2016 paving project, Public Works.
So the Public Works Department has developed a list of streets to be included in this summer's paving project, and those are listed within your memorandum for this agenda item. The project will include asphalt paving overlays, asphalt grinding, ADA accessible ramp upgrades, road-based reconstruction, striping, and other improvements. The construction estimate, which has been created by our engineering department, is $430,000, which includes a 10% contingency. Note that funding is available in the Astoria Road District Fund, which is the local fuel tax. This is the tax that's collected whenever folks purchase gasoline within the Astoria city limits. Assistant City Engineer Nathan Crater is going to provide some additional background on pavement management and also the areas to be paved. And after his presentation, it's recommended that council authorize staff to solicit bids for the 2016 paving project. Nathan? Forward. Susan, if you want to move forward, you can have some. Hey, Nathan.
Right.
multiple hats and so.
Yeah. Thank you, Brett. Again, my name is Nathan Crater. I'm the assistant city engineer and Adam Mayor, City Council. I'll be giving you a brief overview of the city's pavement management program as it relates to the 2016 paving project. Okay, cool, it works. So let's start off with some typical pavement maintenance techniques that the city uses. So we utilize asphalt and concrete patching, like pothole repair. We perform crack sealing and surface sealing, face repair and road reconstruction. An example of that will be on larger projects like the 16th Street CSO project, where you'll see the whole road kind of demoed out and rock brought in, and then asphalt placed on top of that. And then finally, pavement overlays, and that's the primary focus of this year's pavement project. So how do we select streets? Well, we start the process with an initial list from the city's pavement management software program, StreetSaver. This software primarily bases street selection on the street's pavement condition index, or PCI. This is a number that is related to the health of the road. Basically, a high number, such as 100, would represent a road that has just been paved, whereas a number of 10 or below would represent a road that's in a very poor condition, something that would need to be completely reconstructed. So this graph here is a PCI graph with respect to the age of pavement. It shows a couple of really important things. You'll see at the 12 to 15 year mark that the condition of a pavement significantly deteriorates. Then on the top of the graph, you'll see kind of that squiggly line. That represents pavement maintenance when the road is still in good condition, doing thin lift overlays, crack sealing, slurry sealing, things like that. I show this slide to give you kind of a visual representation of why you might see work happening on a road that appears to be in pretty good condition versus a road that is in poor condition and you know, might seem like it's overlooked. Putting a dollar into preventative maintenance up front can save 6 to 10 times that amount later on when the road deteriorates. With that being said, it's not the only thing we look at when we create a paving list. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. The first of those is the condition of the existing underground utilities. When we get that initial list, we send it over to our public workshops, and they do a video inspection of the gravity, sanitary sewer, and storm drainage utilities. We also look at the age of water lines, break history, things like that, in an effort to make sure that we don't pave a road and then have a water line break or a sewer collapse soon after. We like to try to stretch our dollar. Similar to that, our future project needs. We look at improvement projects 2, 5, even 10 years down the road to make sure we're not paving a road and then coming right back through and ripping it up for a CSO project if we can prevent it. We also look at stopgap maintenance obligations. This is the item that kind of differs from that PCI graph that I showed you. There's certain streets that are pretty high volume that get used often, but have deteriorated to a point where we have to put money into them to bring them back up to a condition that promotes ease of travel and reduces liability. An example of that is the section of Irving Avenue between 11th and 14th Street that's included in this year's paving project. We also do a field evaluation to identify unique challenges, such as slide areas. An example of that would be the work that was recently completed on West Grand Avenue to repair a slump in the road. Things like that need to happen up front before a paving project can go through and get the surface in a usable condition. We also look at average daily traffic and road classification. That item will take roads that have higher volumes, collectors, major local routes, and give them priority over low volume, dead-end residential streets. Again, trying to stretch the paving dollar. We also look at a distribution throughout town. We try not to focus all the effort in one individual place, like just in downtown or just east side, just west side. We try to distribute those projects because we're sensitive, knowing that you know this only happens once every other year, typically. And finally, we look at cost efficiency considerations. So combining all those factors with that initial list, make some modifications and come up with a final list. For the 2016 project, this is the list that we've come out up with. The graphic shows kind of the distribution throughout town. It gives you an idea of the treatment typically overlays between an inch and a half and 2 inches. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions you might have.
Nathan, maybe you could talk about why we do it every 2 years and where that money comes from to do the paving?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with the source of the funding. The funding comes from the city's fuel tax. It's a 3 cent per gallon fuel tax that is collected on any gas stations that distribute gasoline in the city limits. That money is sent to the state, and then they give us, basically, they administer the program, and they give us that money to put into our paving fund. And the reason why we do it every 2 years is to utilize an economy of scale. So we get around $200,000 to $250,000 a year in funding, depending on other, routine maintenance like cracks and things like that. And we've determined that a project between $400,000 and $500,000 best utilizes that money. We can tackle larger projects that way. We're not paying for multiple mobilization, things like that.
I have a question. Nathan, number six there, 16th Street, Niagara to James.
Yes.
Maybe it's just the terminology. It seems to me it's Niagara that actually needs the work, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where the road is slumped, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So that's one of those items that I spoke about previously, about doing kind of the field evaluation and identifying those unique issues. So we currently are looking into a project that will remedy that slumped area, looking at different alternatives there. In the meantime, there's a section basically starting just east of that and kind of traveling around the corner down 16th and tying in near the reservoir that's just primed for an asphalt overlay. If we let it go a few more years, we're going to be talking about base repair in that area and whatnot. And so this particular project is targeting that specific section to bring that up. And then when we find a way to mitigate that slide, we'll be able to continue that restoration work perhaps in the next 2 years or maybe even as part of that project.
Is there any reports from, I think you've got an inclinometer in that region there to see if there's still, so I mean, that kind of thing is, what are the current stats on that?
Yeah, I don't have that information. Maybe the public works director might, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I believe there's 2 inclinometers that were put in that established where the slip line was. It's fairly deep. It's like anywhere from 20 to 30 feet deep. It's likely that a project would come in, remove probably anywhere conservatively from 5 to 6 foot of asphalt catchments happened every other year. That is weighing that down, then putting in adequate drainage. We did tested that on a section just to the west of that, and it really has not moved significantly since we put in the drainage. So we have a model what to do. But we don't want to stop the paving program just for that one, because we could sink in half of the paving budget into that one item.
I understand. So actually putting paving to fill that level would make it worse because you're adding weight onto that.
It's a temporary fix.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you for the information. I know that some of us who go there regularly always worry that our car will fall into those sinkholes kind of thing. But that will be. Thanks.
And I wanted to thank Public Works for the work that they did on West Grand, because that's another one that was very similar to Niagara. And that was rebuilt and looks great. And I had a constituent stop me when I was walking my dog, wanting to know when that was going to happen. So I went in and asked Ken Cook, and he said, well, it happens to be happening next week. So that was a really nice thing to be able to report. And it looks great. So maybe you could explain why. I mean, sometimes it seems counterintuitive that we wouldn't repair the worst roads first, but if you might talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I can actually give an example that's within our paving project, and it, it's associated with that kind of that stopgap maintenance obligation I was speaking of. So we do try to repair some of the worst roads. We try to include a couple of them each paving cycle. One of those, I mean, this one is 39th Street. 39th Street between Franklin and Grand. And that particular area has been pothole patched, skim patched. It looks like a patchwork quilt. It has water coming through the base. It's really in poor condition. It is a local residential dead end street, so it typically wouldn't make the cut. It is in there because it has gotten to a condition where we have to do something, basically. Now, that road itself, even though it is a small street, it's narrow, is going to cost similar to, say, doing, you know, two blocks of Exchange Street. So the cost of doing those smaller roads is significantly higher when they're, you know, deteriorated than it is to even do a road like Exchange, which isn't in great condition as it is. So it comes down to cost efficiency. The funding that we have, actually the funding that most agencies have, doesn't come close to covering maintenance obligations. So we're kind of tasked with, you know, how do we spend this most efficiently? And so it's hard to make those decisions because you want to repair the bad roads first, but you know that every dollar you put into a good road is going to save you $10 in the future. And sometimes not even that far in the future. It could be 5 or 10 years in the future. We're not talking about like a 30-year design. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. Any questions from the audience or comments? Okay. Thank you very much, Nathan. Appreciate it.